Tela kang sembar sabe tambe chu je remba ne chu dan chuni number je ba yina tela der ne ju chu yinani somba insarwa
rala
kaza talan jo ba ne tambu ni ne sanje ta sanjo somba nam je ne te yin yong jur ba te samanye samanye tu namdan ransang jeje yang yin.
Of all the topics that comprise the genuine Dharma, tonight we will continue looking at the presentation of the 10 points that make up transformation, as these are described in the text Distinguishing Phenomena and Pure Being. And we have reached the third, which is on page 131. The individuals for whom transformation occurs. And here the root verses read, the approach as related to individuals. The first two of these are transformations to suchness pertaining to Buddhas as well as to bodhisattvas. The last of these pertains additionally to shravakas as well as pracheka buddhas. The approach as related to individuals, the first two of these are transformations to suchness pertaining to Buddhas as well as to bodhisattvas. The last of these pertains additionally to shravakas as well as pracheka buddhas.
Kansa ke ne churpa talan juba ne ne jur kheba ne kema tape ne jur tambu ni ne.
The commentary explains, the approach as related to the individuals who undergo transformation to suchness is as follows. The first two of these transformations just explained comprise the sphere of experience of Buddhas as well as bodhisattvas and bodhisattvis. This is because of the three kayas, it is the Dharmakaya that serves fully and perfectly as the object of experience for Buddhas alone, while the Sambhogakaya is also the object for bodhisattvas. This, in turn, is because Buddhas and bodhisattvas and bodhisattvis possess mastery over the countless appearances of pure domains, utterly pure bodies, and genuine dharma, but shravakas do not. So the transformation, you'll remember, of the outer universe and the bodies that of the sentient beings that inhabit that universe, that's the transformation of Dharmakaya. And the transformation of speech into the sounds of the Dharma and the mastery of being able to teach the Dharma, that's Sambhogakaya. And then the transformation of mind is related to Nirmanakaya. So the first two of these transformations are the domains of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. The last is shared in common by Pracheka Buddhas and Shravakas as well.
Sama Semje Nejurvane Sem Nejurvandene Nejutang.
The last of these, the transformation of mind, pertains additionally to Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas. How is this to be understood? In terms of the three kayas, it means that also Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas are able to see a Nirmanakaya form, embodying the wisdom that embraces all aspects, to see the Nirmanakaya that possesses omniscient wisdom. So Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas can do that. So from that perspective, they enjoy the transformation of the mind for Nirmanakaya because they can see the Nirmanakaya. Nevertheless, this last is in their case merely partial in the sense that what they have undergone is a transformation of the afflicted mentality whose orientation is toward the all-inclusive base. This transformation of mind is therefore taught to be common to all four types of noble beings to a certain degree, although it is not fully complete in the case of Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas. So this is an alternative explanation, which is that, so we have on the one hand the explanation that Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas can see the Nirmanakaya, and the other explanation is that they as well undergo a partial transformation of their own mind, because when they become noble Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas, that means that their afflicted mind transforms and no longer clings to the true existence of self. So they undergo that transformation. In an ordinary sentient being, as it says, the afflicted consciousness looks at what's called the base consciousness and thinks it's the self. But for the Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas, they've purified themselves of that. They realize selflessness. So their minds undergo this transformation, not as great as the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, but a transformation nevertheless. And for that reason, it is said that they are able to enjoy this transformation of Nirmanakaya.
Yeba, de Yeba Kata Pano Yeba Keper Jinan Jobani Sanje Sanjo Sambanam Jinung Tabi Jeberta Chuko Longo Longo Jobata Chuko Tobe Zequata Domba Dana Wanjuni Tobe Jebalin.
The fourth point is the special traits, meaning what is more special for Buddhas and Bodhisattvas than for Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas. And the root verses read, the introduction to traits especially advanced pertains to Buddhas as well as to Bodhisattvas. The distinguishing trait of totally pure domains, that which is gained through attaining the Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, as well as Nirmanakaya, the insight, instruction, and consummate mastery are attainments distinctively greater comparatively. The introduction to traits especially advanced pertains to Buddhas as well as to Bodhisattvas. The distinguishing trait of totally pure domains, that which is gained through attaining the Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, as well as Nirmanakaya, the insight, instruction, and consummate mastery are attainments distinctively greater comparatively.
Deva, ne yonzu churpa, chepar chenle chupa ne, zopit sanje tang, sanju samba namje ne jorte, Jumtsen kanga sena kanzak dami da chuj dami ni yonsu zobe nambar mudobe yihi jintu nenjur tar tokba tar semba tobisero.
And the commentary explains, the introduction to the traits of those transformations which can be characterized as especially advanced pertains to those attained by Buddhas as well as Bodhisattvas. So the transformations of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are greater comparatively than those achieved by Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas. And why is that? It is because these are ultimate transformations, perfect transformations, which they have attained through the efficacy, the power of non-conceptual wisdom, which is the full completion of freedom from self-entity in both its forms. So they have achieved realization of wisdom. What does this wisdom realize? It realizes not only the selflessness of the individuals, like the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas realize, but the emptiness of all phenomena, including the ultimate emptiness, which is the true nature of mind. If one asks why they are ultimate, why these transformations are ultimate, it is because they are manifestations of that nature which is nirvana, the transcendence of suffering. They are direct enlightenment. The transformation of all phenomena for every and all time. So you could say these transformations are ultimate because all phenomena manifest as enlightenment. All phenomena manifest as the natural transcendence of suffering, which means their nature is nirvana, the transcendence of suffering all along, and now this manifests. And when that manifests, then that is ultimate transformation. Because it is the nature that pervades all phenomena. So the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas realize that this is the nature of everything that manifests for them, and so they have this ultimate transformation. And so then what do they get from that? The commentary explains that first, the distinguishing trait of totally pure domains extending throughout the reaches of space. So that means that now the entirety of the universe appears as infinite pure realms. As far as space goes, everything is perceived as a perfectly pure realm. And that which is gained through attaining the Dharmakaya, namely original wisdom's pure insight into all objects of knowledge, that gained through attaining Sambhogakaya, namely the gift of imparting instruction in the remarkably profound and vast teachings of the Mahayana, and that gained through attaining Nirmanakaya, namely consummate mastery over benefiting others in accordance with their enlightened intention due to their attainment of unhindered magical powers such as extrasensory perception and so on. So these four are all attainments distinctively greater comparatively than those of the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas. Fifth, the requirements for transformation. The introduction to realizing what is required, the distinguishing factor of previous wishing prayers, the distinguishing factor of Mahayana teaching as focal point, and the further distinguishing factor of effective application to all 10 levels.
Ne yonzu churba. T chepar chin de la gubam telang khob jo jo ni de churba kang yin ba to ba chepar sa wala jo ba ne lan me be.
The fifth point is the introduction to realizing, which in this case means understanding what is required for this extraordinary transformation. What are the prerequisites? These include the distinguishing factor of previous wishing prayers offered by one wishing to attain unsurpassable great enlightenment, where in praying to do so, the 10 great prayers of a bodhisattva and others are offered. So if one wants to attain the state of perfect Buddhahood, which is what this transformation is, then we need to make aspiration prayers that we can accomplish that. For example, the king of aspiration prayers, the aspiration for excellent conduct. This is also known as the Samantabhadra aspiration prayer, the aspiration for noble, excellent conduct. That's one that we can make, and there are others too. Then the distinguishing factor of eliminating overestimation, or you could just say doubt, with respect to any object of knowledge comprising the two truths, the truth of apparent reality and the truth of genuine reality, which is done. How do you get rid of those doubts? By taking as the focal point all scriptures teaching the Mahayana path and fruition, whether composed in the vast or the profound mode. So the vast mode refers to the teachings about apparent reality, like how to cultivate love and compassion and relative bodhicitta, and the profound teachings about genuine reality. And by training in those, we come to certainty, we eliminate our doubt. And then the further distinguishing factor of effective application to all 10 bodhisattva levels, such that these are progressively traversed for the sake of accomplishing ultimate relinquishment and realization. One should clearly understand that these three factors are the causes of the ultimate transformation, which is superior to that attained through the paths of the Shravakas and Pracheka Buddhas. That is why these three are the distinctive factors comprising the requirements.
De mata de nanger jetting number motobi hiji hebare de nanger jetting de numa de congo.
Burlington.
Burlington, like Jeva Heo, Tantan Jobolo Johnson in the news of Titan Cotin Yapon.
No, sir.
The name Goye Tantatan in Dortin Town. Chu Jeva Heba de Kermateriana Jeba Heva Yang Titan Cortina.
Tene Nejurgi Tengi Jesu Kashe do Deyang Burlington Nasung Song.
Yeah.
Nasa. So we're going to stop here for tonight. The next part of the section on transformation, which is about the support for transformation, original wisdom, I explained in Burlington at the Shambhala Center there. And the first part of the text, which is about phenomena or samsara, as opposed to pure being, I explained at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra last weekend. So for those of you who would like to study the rest of the text in this detail, then you should get the tapes from these two centers, then you put it all together and you can get a complete explanation. And that would be good.
Gumbadola Jopani Njemalam Chebatam Tepa Chembotam.
Now what questions do you have?
Rinpoche, could you repeat the they kind of went by me pretty quickly, the three requirements, the last thing that you just said. Could you just repeat that, please?
Gopa sum yanjar sum ronan gyodra drosum.
Yanjuyam tichichit. Te lo tawa kendeke jangre. Lo tawa.
The translator will give an explanation of this. So these requirements are very good for us to keep in mind because they give a basic outline of the path. The first one, as a Mahayana practitioner, we enter the Mahayana with the aspiration to attain enlightenment. So the first requirement is to make that aspiration again and again. To make the aspiration that we will continue to grow in our good qualities that are of benefit to others, in our ability to be of benefit to others, in our meeting with the conducive conditions so we can be of benefit to others. Because that's why we want to attain enlightenment anyway. Because if you don't want to benefit others, it's much easier to just become a Shravaka or a Pracheka Buddha. Because it only takes much less time comparatively, and you end your own suffering completely. So you could just do that. But if one is not satisfied with that, then one has to reach a higher level of realization to be of benefit to others. And so, for example, this aspiration prayer that Rinpoche said, the aspiration for excellent conduct, which if you're not familiar with that, you can download it from the Nalanda Bodhi website, is a fantastic aspiration prayer to make. If you don't make any other prayer, if you just make this one, then it's sufficient because it's the king. Mm-hmm. It's the king of aspiration prayers. Mm-hmm. And it contains all kinds of verses about aspiring to be have one's own qualities increase and to be of benefit to others in limitless ways. So that's the first requirement. Then the second requirement is to develop one's own understanding of the true nature of reality that is the source of the transformation. And so we do that by listening, reflecting, and meditating on it, on the teachings of the Mahayana. And then the third requirement is to simply progress along the path. And so here the path that's described as the path of the 10 bodhisattva grounds, the first through the 10th, but it also, by implication, includes the paths of the ordinary beings as well. So this means we have to persevere, and we have to keep going. And it's described that a Mahayana practitioner is a bodhisattva or a bodhisattva, which means to be courageous. Right? So we need, in particular, in persevering on this path, three types of courage. The first type is that you vow as a Mahayana practitioner to be of benefit to limitless sentient beings. That's a lot. So you have to have the courage of not being discouraged by how many sentient beings you have to help. And the second type of courage is that to help all these sentient beings takes a long time. So you have to have the courage in order to not be afraid or to get burned out by how long you have to be a benefit to sentient beings. And the third type of courage you need to have is the courage of being able to be willing to do very difficult things to be of benefit to sentient beings. Like giving your head to somebody who wants your head. Giving your limbs to somebody who wants them. In short, doing whatever is necessary to be of benefit to others. So that's what it means
to persevere on the path. But as you go along, then these things actually get easier and easier because you have more realization of emptiness. So when you realize emptiness, then you realize whether it's one sentient being or a billion sentient beings, it's just like a dream. There's no difference. Whether it's an instant or an eon, there's no difference. Time is of the nature of equality. And when you get to be a noble bodhisattva and you directly realize the true nature of reality, you can give away your limbs and your head and all of these things happily. In fact, it's said that nobody can tell who is a bodhisattva from the perspective of their mind, but if you see somebody happily giving away their own flesh, then you know that person is a realized bodhisattva. And so that's why, in a sense, realizing emptiness as the true nature of reality is the whole key. Because then you can, the more you do that, the more effortless your activity for the benefit of others becomes. That's why Maitreya said in another text that for bodhisattvas, samsara is a picnic. You know, he literally said that. He says it's like going to a beautiful garden and having a picnic. Because it's like they're in a dream and they know they're dreaming. So they have a good time. They benefit others and they have a good time. They don't get burned out. Right? We get burned out from helping two people, you know, even. So the whole key is the more one understands the true nature of reality and realizes this true nature of mind, the easier it is to benefit others. And that brings us back to aspiration prayers, because right now we can't really be of benefit to so many people. We don't have that great of a realization, but what we can do, no matter what our situation, whether we're poor, whether we're sick, lying in bed and you can't even get up, you can still make aspiration prayers. And those prayers have great power. That's the secret of Mahayana. So they all fit, all these three fit together.
Thank you.
Now it's clear, isn't it? Other questions?
Mama.
In the back.
Mama.
I was wondering if you could offer from your own experience a method of working with frightening appearances in striving towards these ideals of the courage of a bodhisattva.
The way to bring frightening appearances to the path is to gain certainty that frightening appearances are not real. That frightening appearances are like appearances in dreams. They are like water moons. They are like echoes. They are like illusions. They are appearance and emptiness, undifferentiable. They don't exist in genuine reality. They appear in relative reality, so they are the union of appearance and emptiness. And therefore, they are miraculous. And this follows the explanation of the Lord of Yogis Milarepa when he's saying, Emma, the phenomena of the three realms of samsara. While not existing, they appear. How incredibly amazing. So the phenomena of samsara are amazing because they don't exist at the same time they appear. That's incredible. That something that doesn't exist appears. That something that appears doesn't really exist. That's amazing. So this is how you should look at frightening appearances. look at them and know they don't really exist. And still they're appearing there. And while they're appearing there, they don't really exist. So they too are totally amazing, miraculous. One time, Melarepa was meditating in a cave, and all of a sudden, there appeared in front of him a monkey riding a rabbit.
A rabbit.
And the monkey was wearing this armor made out of corn husks. He had a big shield, and he took his shield, you know, off his arm, and he took a bow out of his sliver of arrows, and he was going to shoot Milarepa with this bow and arrow while he was riding this rabbit. And Milarepa just looked up at him and just cracked up. He just started laughing. And the monkey said, "No, no, no, I've come here to scare you. But if you're not afraid, then I have to leave." And Milarepa just laughed. And before the monkey disappeared, then Milarepa sang to him this song. "I know all appearances are mind, and I realize mind is Dharmakaya. So demon, whatever magic tricks you do, they just make this yogi laugh." So then the demon had to disappear. That's the view we need towards frightening appearances. Now what questions do you have?
Thank you, Rinpoche. I will try and phrase this clearly. It's a question that's been dogging me for some time. And this has to do with the use of logic in the exploration of non-conceptual wisdom. In the West, logic is sort of forcibly dualistic and sort of proceeds from statement to statement in binary oppositions. And when I read this repeated in texts like the formula we were working with last night, the repetition of assertion and then transformation through therefore seems kind of mired it seems almost solipsistic. It seems to be a kind of logic which I have a very hard time admitting into the same category. So it's very hard for me to attain certainty through this use of logic because it's very hard for the way my mind works to see it as logic. And if Rinpoche could explain a little bit how logic can smash dualistic thinking while being dualistic, I should be very grateful.
Rikpa te rikpa dhubzi te ton tenpa tenpa mato pa kapso tene junsi an tenze to le lawa la tente tene to kale kapo jiba zovare mato tato yichi yomare tato yichi.
First of all, we need to understand the function of logic and the time that logic is used. So logic is used when you don't have realization of the true nature of reality. Then, at that point, you have to gain an understanding of what it is. And logic helps you to do that in the steps of taking the things that you do understand and making them the reasons that prove the points that are more difficult to understand. So you put as the reason of proof what is easier to understand, and that helps to clarify for you something which is more difficult to understand, to gain certainty about that difficult point. But logic doesn't truly exist. So you don't have to have ultimate faith in it. Because ultimately, there's nothing to have faith in. Right? It's just a tool from the perspective of relative reality. So it's like if you're in a dream and you don't know you're dreaming, then how are you going to understand that it's a dream? Right? You use your powers of you can use your powers of analysis to understand that it's just a dream. But then you know that the logic in the dream doesn't really exist either. It's just a method to gain an understanding when you're an ordinary individual. So that's what, for example, these reasons in the section on perfect purity are. Desire is perfectly pure and therefore forms are perfectly pure. This is talking about the true nature of reality. It's a description of what the true nature of reality is. When you don't know the true nature of reality, it's hard to believe. Right? Just like when you're dreaming and you don't know you're dreaming, then all the forms and the desire and the anger and everything seems to be real. It doesn't seem to be perfectly pure. But what's its nature? It's just a dream. So it is perfectly pure. That's really what it is. But we can use logic to help ourselves, even as ordinary individuals, to understand that, to get an understanding of the true nature of reality. That's the function of it. When we don't have an understanding of their true nature, when we believe them to be truly existent, then desire, anger, and stupidity are harmful and should be abandoned. So they are things to be abandoned when we don't realize their true nature. And that's that level is called the level of no analysis. Then when you do some analysis, you find that there's nothing there at all. When you analyze desire, anger, and stupidity, you can't find anything. It's like empty space. It's mere emptiness that is like space. And then you look at back at their appearance, and you realize their appearance is just a mere appearance that appears due to the coming together of causes and conditions. But as soon as you investigate that to the tiniest degree, you don't find anything. So at that level, you conclude their nature is emptiness. And then when you analyze even more, to the greatest, to the most perfect extent that you can, you find that their nature is beyond conceptual fabrication. It's not existent, it's not non-existent, it's not something, it's not nothing, it's beyond any concept of what it might be. So it's called the transcendence of fabrication, or the freedom from fabrications, or simplicity. And this transcendence of fabrication cannot have any stain, because it's beyond concept, and so it's perfectly pure. And if you have trouble believing in the logic of these verses, for example, then just relate it to your own experience of a dream. Like if you have desire in a dream, then you have some person in the dream who you feel desire towards, right? But you could say that since the person who you feel desire for in the dream doesn't really exist, then the desire doesn't really exist. Or you could start by saying that since I, as the person who feel the desire in the dream, don't really exist, then my desire doesn't really exist, then the person I feel desire for doesn't really exist. Or you could say, since the dream desire doesn't truly exist, then the one who is desired and the one who feels the desire don't truly exist. So you can start any direction you want, right? Just what's easier at the time to understand. That's all. So you could, if you wanted to use it from the perspective of perfect purity, then you would say, since the desirous mind in the dream is perfectly pure, then the one whom you desire is perfectly pure. Or, since the one whom you desire in the dream is perfectly pure, then the desirous mind is perfectly pure. So it just depends on which one you figure out is perfectly pure first. Then you use that to prove the perfect purity of the other one. But they both can equally prove the other's perfect purity. And when we're ordinary individuals, then we need to remember these reasons again and again. And then when you become a noble bodhisattva, you don't need to remember the reasons anymore. Because you don't have any clinging to things as being truly existent. So you don't need to remember the reason why they're not truly existent. You can do the same thing with anger in the dream. Since the angry mind in the dream doesn't truly exist, since it's perfectly pure, then the person you're angry at is also not truly existent, is also perfectly pure. Or you could say, since the one whom you're angry at doesn't truly exist, is perfectly pure, then the angry mind must also not be truly existent, must also be perfectly pure. So they can mutually prove the perfect purity of each other. And about ignorance, stupidity's perfect purity, then Milarepa is saying, the movement of mental consciousness inside, not realized, is ignorance itself. So when we don't have realization of the true nature of reality, all states of mind are afflicted by stupidity, are afflicted by ignorance. But if you realize the perfect purity of stupidity, then all states of mind you also realize are perfectly pure. And every phenomenon that you perceive with your mind is also perfectly pure, because its underlying nature is perfectly pure. So it's not like you're just going to read one verse from this sutra and have certainty in it. Right? And that's why the Buddha taught so many verses. From form through omniscience, every phenomenon gets its own verse, 108. Even just reading the verse, the section of 108 through once is not enough. You should read it 108 times. Because that way, you'll memorize the verses. And then the more you remember them, and the more you recite them, the more certainty you'll have in them. And that's why the Buddha taught so many verses. It's because it's so profound that it requires us to go over it again and again in order to gain certainty in it. It's just like with Ngundro. You don't just do each Ngundro practice once or twice. You do them 100,000 times. Because every time you do it, it gets better. It's more and more stable. You get more and more certainty. And your practice gets better and better.
Sambom sadu, tene tepa chere chere ro,
For example, when you do the Guru Yoga practice and you pray, I supplicate you, precious Guru, please bless me that I can abandon this ego-clinging mind. Then every time you recite that, your ego-clinging gets less and less. Mm-hmm. And your realization of selflessness grows. It's the same with perfect purity. If you recite these 108 verses that make up each section of perfect purity 108 times, then your certainty in them will grow. And if you recite these verses with a little bit of melody, then it takes to do 108 verses, it takes about an hour. If you do it quickly, then it takes about 40 minutes. And Walker recited the verses on desire's perfect purity, all of the 108 verses, 108 times. He finished that. So now he's reciting anger's perfect purity verses, 108 times. And he made a nice melody too, so it would be good if he came back to the center and you had a weekend session where for one Dharma session or two, you could all recite together. Now he's working on anger's perfect purity. How many times have you recited that?
32.
He's getting closer and closer to 108. And that's good. And if the one who leads the chanting has experience chanting a lot, then that's very good. The second turning of the wheel of Dharma's teachings are important, and from among the second turning of the wheel of Dharma's teachings, the teachings about perfect purity are very important for this day and age. How they are is something we should get experience in ourselves. For example, as I explained to you about Machig Labdrin, who was an emanation of the noble lady Tara, she read the whole 100,000 verse Prajnaparamita Sutra once a day for a month. And when she was doing that, she read, form is not white, form is not red, form is not rectangular, form is not circular. And through this, she realized that form and all other phenomena are of the nature of emptiness. And she realized emptiness directly. So you should follow her example. The teachings about perfect purity and complete purity are the same as the view of the Vajrayana. But because they are from the Prajnaparamita Sutras, you don't need an empowerment to be able to practice them. You don't need to rely on having received an empowerment. You can just practice them straight away. And that's why for this day and age, they're very important. So they're a practice that one doesn't need an empowerment for, that everybody can do together, and there's no discussion about Samaya, having to keep Samaya or breaking Samaya or anything like that.
Yang
And for those people who like empowerments, then you can request the empowerment of the Great Mother Dharmakaya. There is that empowerment of the Great Mother Dharmakaya that you can get in connection with this. It's like that. We should now recite some verses from this sutra, and just to explain the handout that you've been given, on the first page there are different verses. Each verse is basically the same in terms of the structure. Just for example, the first verse says desire is perfectly pure and therefore forms are perfectly pure. So that's the first verse from the section on desire. Then the second verse says anger is perfectly pure and therefore feelings are perfectly pure. So that's the second verse from the section of anger, because anger starts the same as desire. Then the third one is stupidity. So for this one, we have the third verse. Stupidity is perfectly pure, and therefore discriminations are perfectly pure. So if you look then on page 4, you have the whole list of all the things. So you would just substitute, you would start desire is perfectly pure, and therefore forms are perfectly pure. Feelings, discriminations, formations, consciousnesses, those are the five aggregates. Then the next ones are the six sense faculties, the six objects, the six consciousnesses, the six kinds of contact, the six kinds of feeling. It's all there. It's pretty straightforward. And that this list makes up the whole set. If you look at the bottom, it tells you which ones are not included in the perfect purity sections. And then, if you look on page 3, you have this list of the 12 ways of saying self. And so these go with the verses on complete purity. And that's an example of that is given at the top of page 2, where it says the self is completely pure and therefore formations are completely pure. So that would be the fourth verse in the section on the self. You could start at the beginning and you'd say, the self is completely pure, and therefore forms are completely pure. And the only difference is you substitute, instead of saying perfectly pure, you say completely pure, right? When you're working with these 12 ways of saying self. So, which, and then the last couple pages, if you study Tibetan, then you just have the whole list in Tibetan. So in these few pages, you have basically like a volume and a half of sutra. Just that every, in the sutras, it's just every verse is repeated. The whole thing is written out, one after the other. But this gives you a way to recite everything that's there just by looking at the list, and you go down the list and you just say it once after the, one after the next. And eventually you learn them by heart, so you don't need the list anymore. So now we should, Rinpoche says, recite some verses. So what we're going to do is you can look at the list on page 4, and we're going to recite the verses of the five aggregates, which are the first ones, and with forms and feelings, we're going to recite with desire being perfectly pure, and then discriminations and formations, anger being perfectly pure, and finally consciousnesses with stupidity being perfectly pure. And the way the verses go is written on the first page. So we'll recite together. Desire is perfectly pure, and therefore forms are perfectly pure. Forms are perfectly pure, and therefore desire is perfectly pure. Thus, desire perfectly pure, and forms perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. Desire is perfectly pure, and therefore feelings are perfectly pure. Feelings are perfectly pure, and therefore desire is perfectly pure. Thus, desire perfectly pure, and feelings perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. Anger is perfectly pure, and therefore discriminations are perfectly pure.
Discriminations are perfectly pure, and therefore anger is perfectly pure. Thus, anger perfectly pure, and discriminations perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. Anger is perfectly pure, and therefore formations are perfectly pure. Formations are perfectly pure, and therefore anger is perfectly pure. Thus, anger perfectly pure, and formations perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. Stupidity is perfectly pure, and therefore consciousnesses are perfectly pure. Consciousnesses are perfectly pure, and therefore stupidity is perfectly pure. Thus, stupidity perfectly pure, and consciousnesses perfectly pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different.
Jada jeta so chuke samore, yang nansin in topcha manjebe ye mandiba choje so nangiyeva mambu yere, tesa tamji hina, then the colo pato chuke lankeba yere. Inji chiku ten in the indona, inji chuke keba chagre. Perket a nindona, then a ke nina keba chagre. Yang perket jang insu, dadang dan jet and dona, then a perket dadang yabu chagre, le lavo, colo parpe.
The more you become familiar with this list of 108 phenomena, then the more skilled and learned you become in Dharma vocabulary, in the vocabulary of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma. And you can see near the end, you have lots of different categories, like the Tathagata's strengths, number 97, and the fearlessnesses and the perfectly discriminating awarenesses. So these are subjects that are described in texts like Entering the Middle Way by Chandrakirti and the Treatise on the Buddha Nature by Maitreya. So if you look in those texts, you can find the descriptions of what these are talking about and their inner divisions. And then you can learn a lot by doing that, and you can, if you read it in English, you can become learned in the middle turnings vocabulary in English. If you read it in Tibetan, you can become learned in Dharma vocabulary in Tibetan, and also you can improve your Tibetan pronunciation very quickly and easily by reciting, by using these verses as a basis for your study and practice of Tibetan. So you can do it in one language, you can do it in two languages, you can do it any way you want, but it's of benefit.
Then the Yeva Tazo, Jilaman Dang, Maman Joba Lasoba, Yenda Lerina, Kanga Ke, Du Kale Kabudo, Tes Yeva Te, Le Lavati, Yumazo Samay.
So these, in the latter part of the list, these different categories are discussed, like the fearlessnesses and the Buddha's 18 unique qualities and so forth, are described in the texts like the Treatise on the Buddha Nature and Entering the Middle Way, but you don't really find one place where they are all together. And so I'm thinking of making something like that, where they would all be described in one place to make it easy.
Then it dug a Namdang Juni on that Juni day, Kachemburi Kainsena, Dadan Kanza, the Sepa Bola, Tupetuba Mambo, the Chadang Mambo Yere, then he on that the Zuhina, then it is Tupa Yoman.
And then on page 3, where we have the list of the 12 ways of saying self, these are all completely pure. And learning about and gaining certainty in the complete purity of these is very important, because there's a lot of debate that comes out of clinging to the self and clinging to the leader and clinging to the creator as being truly existent, and then people get in debates about who is the creator and who is the right leader and who is the self and all these things. So if you learn that these are all completely pure, then there's no debate because they're all equal. They're all of the nature of equality. They're all completely pure. But it's not like we just made up these 12 types of complete purity to deal with the debates of this age. This is something that the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago. So let's recite then the verses about the self being completely pure in connection with the five aggregates, which are the first five on the list again. The self is completely pure, and therefore forms are completely pure. Forms are completely pure, and therefore the self is completely pure. Thus the self completely pure, and forms completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The self is completely pure, and therefore feelings are completely pure. Feelings are completely pure, and therefore the self is completely pure. Thus the self completely pure, and feelings completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The self is completely pure, and therefore discriminations are completely pure. Discriminations are completely pure, and therefore the self is completely pure. Thus the self completely pure, and discriminations completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The self is completely pure, and therefore formations are completely pure. Formations are completely pure, and therefore the self is completely pure. Thus the self completely pure, and formations completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The self is completely pure, and therefore consciousnesses are completely pure. Consciousnesses are completely pure, and therefore the self is completely pure. Thus the self completely pure, and consciousnesses completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different.
And then same thing on that day.
And we should recite the verses about the sentient being being completely pure in connection now with the next six verses, which are the six faculties, because the sentient being is comprised of these six faculties, beginning with the eyes, and also when we get sick, then we have especially a lot of clinging to the six faculties as being truly existent, and therefore thinking that the sentient being is truly existent. And so it would be good now to train a little bit in how the sentient being and the six faculties are completely pure.
Yeah.
Danda dang zona And so now we'll use the melody that Walker made to go with these verses. So you can see what that sounds like, and if you like it, then you can use it too when you recite. Either way is fine. The sentient being is completely pure, and therefore the eyes are completely pure. The eyes are completely pure, and therefore the sentient being is completely pure. And thus the sentient being completely pure, and the eyes completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The sentient being is completely pure, and therefore the ears are completely pure,
The ears are completely pure, and therefore the sentient being is completely pure. And thus, the sentient being completely pure, and the ears completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The sentient being is completely pure, and therefore the nose is completely pure. The nose is completely pure, and therefore the sentient being is completely pure. And thus, the sentient being completely pure, and the nose completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The sentient being is completely pure, and therefore the tongue is completely pure. The tongue is completely pure, and therefore the sentient being is completely pure. And thus, the sentient being completely pure, and the tongue completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The sentient being is completely pure, and therefore the body is completely pure. The body is completely pure, and therefore the sentient being is completely pure. And thus, the sentient being completely pure, and the body completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The sentient being is completely pure, and therefore the mind is completely pure. The mind is completely pure, and therefore the sentient being is completely pure. And thus, the sentient being completely pure, and the mind completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different.
Now we should recite some verses with the Creator being completely pure, because knowing that the Creator is completely pure is very important in this day and age, because we are exposed to theories about lots of different creators. And they all, if one clings to them as being truly existent, then there can be lots of debate, like creators that different religious traditions talk about, creators that science talks about, and there are creators of technology, creators of buildings, creators of everything. And so it's therefore important for us to know that all creators are of the nature of equality, because their actual reality is that they are all completely pure. Even the Mahayana talks sometimes about a creator. Sometimes it's explained that Vairochana is the creator. Sometimes it's explained that Samantabhadra is the creator. But whoever the creator is completely pure. There's no logical proof that one or two creators are completely pure and the other ones aren't. There is logical proof that all creators are of the nature of complete purity. And that's important for us to understand. These days the world has become very small, and so all of the different traditions that assert different creators can all meet under one roof and have discussions. And when that happens, the best thing they can say is that all creators are completely pure. You can say that my creator is completely pure and all of yours aren't, but that's an illogical statement. There's no logical proof that can make that a valid statement. On the other hand, the Buddha taught that all creators are equally of the nature of complete purity, and that is something that can be logically proven, and therefore it's good for us to gain certainty in it. So let's connect this now with the six objects, starting with forms, then sounds, smells, tastes, tactile, bodily sensations, and phenomena. The Creator is completely pure, and therefore forms are completely pure. Forms are completely pure, and therefore the Creator is completely pure. And thus, the Creator completely pure, and forms completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The Creator is completely pure, and therefore sounds are completely pure. Sounds are completely pure, and therefore the Creator is completely pure. And thus, the Creator completely pure, and sounds completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The Creator is completely pure, and therefore smells are completely pure. Smells are completely pure, and therefore the Creator is completely pure. And thus, the Creator completely pure, and smells completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The Creator is completely pure, and therefore tastes are completely pure. Tastes are completely pure, and therefore the Creator is completely pure. And thus, the Creator completely pure, and tastes completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The Creator is completely pure, and therefore bodily sensations are completely pure. Bodily sensations are completely pure, and therefore the Creator is completely pure. And thus, the Creator completely pure, and bodily sensations completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The Creator is completely pure, and therefore phenomena are completely pure. Phenomena are completely pure, and therefore the Creator is completely pure. And thus, the Creator completely pure, and phenomena completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. Now we should recite the verses about the leader being completely pure. Because there's a lot of attachment and aversion that can arise when we think about the leader. And so we should consider how the leader's true nature is complete purity. That's important for us to know. So we will recite the verses about the leader being completely pure in connection with the six elements. And these are starting with number 36, the element of earth. The leader is completely pure, and therefore the element of earth is completely pure. The element of earth is completely pure, and therefore the leader is completely pure. And thus, the leader completely pure, and the element of earth completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The leader is completely pure, and therefore the element of water is completely pure. The element of water is completely pure, and therefore the leader is completely pure. And thus, the leader completely pure, and the element of water completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The leader is completely pure, and therefore the element of fire is completely pure. The element of fire is completely pure, and therefore the leader is completely pure. And thus, the leader completely pure, and the element of fire completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The leader is completely pure, and therefore the element of wind is completely pure. The element of wind is completely pure, and therefore the leader is completely pure. And thus, the leader completely pure, and the element of wind completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The leader is completely pure, and therefore the element of space is completely pure. The element of space is completely pure, and therefore the leader is completely pure. And thus, the leader completely pure, and the element of space completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. The leader is completely pure, and therefore the element of consciousness is completely pure. The element of consciousness is completely pure, and therefore the leader is completely pure. And thus, the leader completely pure, and the element of consciousness completely pure, are not dual, cannot be made dual, are not separate, and are not different. In this way, if you recite these verses about the 12 kinds of complete purity, then gradually their meaning will be more and more clear. And just for me to sit here and say that this will happen, that they'll become more clear, that's not of enough benefit. You should meet together as a group on weekends and recite these verses together. It's like that. May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness.
happiness. Next life may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefit beings.
Dini dekan tasun dona dhamba danyam bhogom javare kisena gom kaka lagom dhamba.
When you recite these verses, then on complete and perfect purity, you meditate at the same time. So you don't need any separate meditation than that.
It's
just like when practitioners do Vajrayana ritual practices, sometimes they last for 12 hours. And so they meditate while they do the practice. They don't have a separate meditation time apart from the recitations that go with the practice. If you want to recite, to place, make a priority, then reciting the verses of desire's perfect purity and anger's perfect purity and stupidity's perfect purity, you should recite each of those sections 108 times. The ones for the 12 kinds of complete purity, you don't need to do that. It's like that.
That is one.
Now we're finished.
It's my parting aspiration prayer for you all. I pray that your wisdom arising from listening to, reflecting on, and meditating on the teachings of the genuine Dharma will increase and increase, and that through this you will be able to be of great benefit to limitless sentient beings.
Yang chuto sonan chimbore chuto chobade chuto ke dene gozi tam pombo dan lezi choya dene chuto ko to do kale kha po chetam chewa te chan je sonam parvar choje.
Also, it is a great accumulation of merit to work at a Dharma center, and so I pray that for the directors and everyone who works and practices at this center, however difficult it is when you are performing these different kinds of activity, by that much more may your merit increase. And for Dharma practitioners in general, however much difficulty you must endure when you're practicing the Dharma, by that much more may your merit increase. From among all of the great realized masters of the land of snows, the one whose life story is the most important and most well known is that of the Lord of Yogis Milarepa. And the reason why is because he's the one who underwent the greatest difficulty. Especially when it's the case that one lives and is practicing the Dharma in a country where the Dharma is new, just beginning to grow and to flourish, then it's especially important to work to support the Dharma and to help it to grow, and therefore, in countries like this, especially, the more things you do, the even greater your merit is. Because in places where the Dharma is new, it's very important that there are Dharma centers, because if there's no Dharma center, there's no place for people to come and practice, listen to, meditate on the Dharma.
And
And so in closing, I pray that you continue to practice on the path of emptiness and compassion, that your practice on this path gets better and better, and as a result that you are able to be of great benefit to limitless sentient beings.
Nandere Nimor Delic, Sendele, Nime Gumyan Delic, Nimsen Tato Delic, Kujo Sumje Draji.